This Dharma, incomparably profound and minutely subtle, is rarely encountered, even in hundreds of thousands of millions of ages. Now we can see it, hear it, hold and maintain it. May we completely realize the Tathagata's true meaning.
I want to do something a little different this morning. I'm going to read a review that I just wrote of a book called The Psychoanalytic Zero by a Japanese psychoanalyst, Koichi Togashi. And he subtitles it A Decolonizing Study of Therapeutic Dialogues, by which he means looking at the process by which psychoanalytic theory and practices developed in the West have to change or accommodate themselves when brought into Japanese culture. And one of the things he does is try to adapt self-psychological theories to a Buddhist context in Japan, particularly using ideas like emptiness. And in a way, he's doing something very similar to what we do when we bring Buddhist ideas from Asia to America. We look at them and ask, well, how do they have to give or adapt in order to make sense within our culture? So he's doing something very similar, going from a different direction. And I think that you'll find that the issues that get raised here dovetail with what we've been discussing about the Heart Sutra in recent weeks, and there'll be some explicit discussion of that in here, plus long-standing issues of the nature of the self and no self. So I think that it's if we were back in New York, it's a there are sections of the book I would be interested in all reading together as part of a discussion group. But in this format, I thought I would read the review I'm writing of it for the self-psychological journal. It's called Psychoanalysis, Self, and Context. And we can discuss it in the hour following. Koichi Togashi trained as a psychoanalyst in New York, in English, his second language, and then returned in 2006 to his native Japan, where he has endeavored to integrate self-psychological and intersubjective perspectives with the cultural and clinical experiences he encountered at home. In order to fully engage his patients, he discovered he needed to go beyond the understanding and explaining that has traditionally characterized Kohut self-psychology and enter into a distinctly Japanese realm characterized by such concepts as emptiness, makoto, sincerity, and mono no aware, an appreciative acceptance of transience. The psychoanalytic zero offers the fruit of that integration and a window into how our theories are shaped by their cultural context and how they must stretch when translated into new ones. Togashi's treatment of a young woman, Mayuki, whose face was disfigured by a fire when she was 4 years old, offers a beautiful example of how his clinical acumen is shaped by his analytic training in conjunction with the Japanese moral ideal of makoto, which can be translated as sincerity, but which conveys something profounder than that English equivalent suggests. Makoto, says Togashi, implies a pure and selfless mind, one open to the cosmic tide of the psychoanalytic process, in which each participant is both aware of but transcends their personal, professional, and societal roles. In order to engage at a level of radical sincerity or authenticity, Mayuki's case, social convention required that everyone, herself included, minimize or ignore her prominent facial scars. For a long time, she affected a cheerful nonchalance about her appearance, though she entered treatment complaining her family treated her differently than her siblings, never arguing with her, always treating her with great delicacy, leading ultimately to a profound sense of unreality and non-recognition. For a long time, the subject of her appearance remained off limits in the therapy as well. Finally, one day, Togashi writes, she surprised me with a question that had long been taboo between us. I am ugly, aren't I? She asked. He reports that all the usual reassurances immediately ran through his mind, but he said nothing. Something in her expression made him feel she would not allow me to whitewash my response. After what felt like a long silence, he simply and slightly nodded once. She did not reply. Eventually, she was able to tell him, I was shocked by your confirmation of my word, but it was good because you were honest. People always try to be nice, but it's a lie. That was a moment of honesty, and it made me feel better about my life. Togashi maintains that what he displayed in that silent nod cannot be understood by any of our Western notions of honesty, sincerity, or authenticity. It was not an expression of what he was actually thinking or feeling, not an action matched to my subjectivity or conviction, but one that happened to appear in the moment when my preoccupation with my own thoughts, intentions, and feelings disappeared. He goes on to say, Makoto in this case can be understood as surrendering myself to the cosmic tide of the universe, which can be seen as the irrationality of the world and human vulnerability. In this dimension, all personal and professional considerations were let go, and I was not thinking about myself or my Yuki. The nodding was less my own action than an element in the intersubjective field. I've quoted Togashi at some length here to give not just an account of a successful clinical intervention, one which frankly would not seem out of place in a self-psychological or relational clinical presentation in America, but to convey the flavor of what he feels and thinks about what happened, the philosophical and ethical context in which he places it, and how he sees the larger cosmic perspective transcending his and our usual professional role. Togashi repeatedly returns to grounding his work in the shared twinship of simply being human, of being a vulnerable creature in a random, unpredictable world. He translates his maxim of being precedes awareness into a therapy of presence rather than one based on understanding, let alone interpretation. The Japanese aesthetic of mono no aware, the appreciation of transience, is invoked in a case of a suicidal woman, Mizuho, who had been raised in a violent household and who since childhood had a sexual relationship with a cousin who lived with the family. The year before her seeking therapy, the cousin hung himself in the apartment where Mizuho found his dead body and somehow took it down herself. Afterwards, she continued to live in the room where he killed himself. She told Togashi, I do not think you can understand me. I loved my cousin, who I thought of as my brother, and I had slept with. Then I cared for his dead body. I had been many times assaulted by my father, and many times feared being killed by him. There is no expectation in me to be understood. No way. Togashi realizes there's a part of her which I never reached or understood because she was not me, but the other, and that he could not stop her from killing herself if she chose. All he can offer is an acknowledgement of this basic human condition of being thrown into a traumatizing world without informed consent. With another patient, a blocked artist who regularly fell asleep on his couch, no form of inquiry or understanding seemed to penetrate or influence what he came to call her cocoon state. Finally, he says, what's transformed this impasse was his own surrender to the circumstance. I stopped thinking, exploring, analyzing, and focusing on her from a psychoanalytic perspective, and only tried to be present. The therapeutic relationship had dwindled to zero. Yet when I finally relinquished my analytic mindset, her creativity came back to her. From acutely drawn case studies such as this one, we can see that Togashi has achieved a clinically masterful integration of self-psychological thinking with his own uniquely Japanese perspective and conceptualization. I trust that the psychoanalytic zero will prove to be an invaluable guide to a new generation of analytically inclined Japanese therapists. But what are we as Westerners to make of his innovations? If concepts like emptiness, Makoto, or Mono no Oware describe a unique Japanese sensibility or orientation to life and are a fundamental dimension of his clinical acumen, to what extent is it possible to export them to the West? Togashi remarks on the typographical similarity between zero and beyond's O, but contends, unlike O, the zero does not refer to the ground of being or ultimate nature of the patient, but an aspect of nature emerging in the infinite universe or the analytic work. In other words, zero is neither something in the patient, nor the analyst, nor in the relationship between them. His clinical stance to a Western audience might sometimes sound very similar to one of simply holding or containing. How much does it matter that he insists on the radical difference of zero? Is it a difference that makes a difference? Now, it is the case that some of this sensibility has already come west with the current interest in Buddhism. I myself am a product of this transmission from east to west, having practiced Zen for over 40 years, received Dharma transmission as a Zen teacher in my own right, and taught students of my own for the past 20 years. My own writing has endeavored to formulate an integration of Buddhism and psychoanalysis in much the same way as has Togashi, though coming from the opposite direction, so to speak. And here is where things get complicated, because the place I find myself disagreeing with Togashi is precisely where he seeks to ground his analytic zero in the Buddhist idea of emptiness. In his preface, Togashi states as axiomatic that being precedes awareness. This means that in his example, when you receive a telephone call from a prospective patient, there's a moment in which each person, before they fall into their roles of psychoanalyst and patient, of someone in pain and seeking help, and someone who offers that help, is a moment without context that he refers to as the psychoanalytic zero. As in the case of Mayuki, there's a sense that our socially constructed selves are accommodative adaptations that overlay an underlying core in a way that to my Western analytic ears sounds analogous to Winnicott's distinction between the true and the false self. In support of that comparison, Togashi says, Makoto is strongly connected to the struggle to live as a human being within a rigid social system. The implication is that the social system imposes on us an accommodative self, but underneath that social shell lies a human being, free of social context and definition. For Winnicott, that human alternative was characterized by a subjective sense of agency and creativity. But for Togashi, being precedes not only our social roles, but even awareness, conceptualization, and understanding, and thus is designated by zero, or the Buddhist concept of emptiness. Togashi cites the well-known Buddhist text known as the Heart Sutra, which declares form is exactly emptiness, emptiness exactly form, as embodying, quote, the true nature of the universe, which is impermanence, suffering, non-self, and emptiness. His interpretation gives primacy to the emptiness side of the equation, to the zero, as if it precedes, underlies, or is somehow a foundational ground of being, out of which our ordinary, socially constructed world arises. This is what allows him to imagine a way of being that exists prior to context, an emptiness without form. But let me, from my perspective as a Zen teacher, offer an interpretation of the Heart Sutra that suggests something different. To say that form is exactly emptiness means that form, things or elements of the world, has no inner, unchanging, essential nature. Form is meant to cover all those aspects of our physical reality that we usually take to be solid, unchanging objects. But it also includes objects of experience, our thoughts, feelings, conceptions, etc. To say that all these forms, mental and subjective, as well as physical and objective, are empty, says that they only exist as the intersection of constantly changing interactions. Everything is interaction and change, a description quite compatible with an intersubjective or relational perspective. Another world for this matrix of constantly changing causal interaction is context. Who and what we are not only arises out of this context, but more radically, we are nothing but context. Even what we experience as emptiness, being, or transcendence is inseparable from context. This has profound implications for notions of the self, which, like everything else, exists as the intersection, relational, intersubjective, causal, of everything that makes up our world. Non-self thus means not an absent or non-existent self, as Buddhism is often mistakenly said to claim, but a self that is context all the way down, with no core or pure or true self to be discovered deep inside or under layers of conditioning. So to use Togashi's example, I'm not my true self before I enter the office, pick up the ringing telephone, and slip into my professional role, because whoever or whatever I am before or after is still context dependent, i.e. empty. My non-self is what is being expressed in the moment, including moments in which I'm enacting a role, for these too have no fixed or enduring solidity. A Zen koan asked the students, "Show me your original face before the birth of your parents." The question is phrased to elicit our fantasy that our original face, our true self, must be something deep inside that pre-exists our conditioning, our parents, i.e. our context. But that's not where it is at all. Our original face is inseparable from the one in the mirror. Form is exactly emptiness. And we are called upon to recognize we are fully expressing our true self moment by moment. Nothing is hidden. This is not to say that we're transparent to ourselves, or that there is no such thing as dissociation. Rather, that there is no authentic or inner self, uncontaminated by context, waiting to be uncovered. Paradoxically, we bury our true self in fantasies of depth, authenticity, and even emptiness, obscuring what is already there. The idea that through an experience of emptiness, we can be without context is ironically the mirror image of the Western pursuit of objectivity, which Kohut rejected as an appropriate foundation for psychoanalysis. In both cases, we imagine that our subjectivity, our context, is like a set of lenses which we can remove. And it doesn't matter whether what we say lies underneath is pure rationality or zero. Both are fantasies of what Nietzsche called immaculate perception. Rather, ours is always a view from somewhere, never from nowhere. It is perhaps doubly ironic to be making this argument in a journal with context in its name. I would venture to suggest that being a psychoanalyst or a Buddhist creates its own context, one very different from our usual social context, especially one defined by rigid social and cultural expectations. Within that context, it may feel that something or nothing extraordinary is able to happen. Within Japanese culture, the contrast with everyday social expectation is so radical that Togashi chooses to call this new context, no context. But the language of no context that Togashi uses to such advantage within a Japanese context has for me serious problems when translated back into our Western philosophical context. The meaning and usefulness of no context turns out to be very context dependent. But within his own context, no context is very useful indeed.
Self-centered dream, only suffering. Waking to a dream within a dream. Each moment, life as it is, the only teacher. Being just this moment, compassion's way. Caught in a self-centered dream, only suffering. Waking to a dream within a dream. Each moment, life as it is, the only teacher. Being just this moment, compassion's way. Caught in a self-centered dream, only suffering. Waking to a dream within a dream. Each moment, life as it is, the only teacher. Being just this moment, compassion's way.
So why don't we take a 5-minute break before discussion group?